and welcome to episode 15 of Podcast to Be Named Later, official podcast of outfieldflyrule.com. I'm Brent Blackwell, here today with TJ Alexander.
Hello.
Let's see.
Hello.
Yeah. Talk about the week behind us. Braves won two games.
It felt great. It felt like we were on fire.
Is it just the two?
One against the Phils, one against the
Royals. Yeah. Well, didn't fell short of my 4-2 bold prediction by a couple games, but still felt pretty good.
We had close losses. Yeah. Pitched really well all week.
Yeah. A week ago when Chris and I podcast, we had a run differential of like 2 runs per game on average, and we have shortened that up to 1.78.
Moving on up.
Yeah, we've cut 0.2 runs off of our average deficit. Yeah, we're still pretty bad. We're still at 250 baseball, which is really bad.
Yeah, right where we want to be.
But there were some like good moments. There were some. Folty had a brilliant start against Kansas City. I think that's the top performance of the week for Atlanta.
It's the one that means the most, especially too, because you feel like Williams Perez might not be. You feel like that could be some kind of sight of Fulte's future, you know. Yeah. But with Williams Perez, you're just like,
yeah.
With Williams, you do that every once a month, that'd be great.
With Williams Perez, it was like getting just a lottery ticket win for the night. Whereas Fulte's movement on some of those pitches was pretty incredible. 96 miles per hour with movement and location. He really looked like a good pitcher against Kansas City. Whistler also had a good game. Also, Bud Norris continues to pitch well out of the bullpen. He has a sub-1 ERA since moving to the pen. You know what? Wade Davis wasn't a good starter either. I'm just going to say it. Wade Davis was not a good starting pitcher and was an amazing reliever. I'm not saying Bud Norris is Wade Davis, but sometimes it can be that drastic. There can be that much of a change when you turn a bad starter into a reliever.
Right.
And Norris isn't at that level at all, but he's useful as a reliever, it seems. Especially going 2 innings a game. That's very useful. And I know the extra inning game was very disappointing for Braves fans on Sunday, but I thought Freddie used his bullpen fairly well in the game.
I like seeing 2 innings out of multiple relievers. That's how you preserve a pen for the next game that goes 13 innings.
Especially when you're having to play on Monday on the road.
Especially when you're playing with this team.
Yeah.
Like, just there's no reason to pitch 3 pitchers in 2 innings. You know what I mean?
Right. There's also a tendency to, you know, Freddie used to be unwilling to use his closer on the road.
Right.
In extra inning games or in, you know, tie games. And Arodis Vizcaino pitched 2 innings yesterday, which is exactly what I wanted to see when I looked at the box score. I was out of town this weekend. I didn't get to watch a lot of the Braves. So that was a good thing to see. You know, once it gets past the 12th inning, I was telling you this earlier, I don't blame managers anymore. It's once it's past the 12th, just finish the game some way. And maybe you win, maybe you lose. But it's almost like, I feel like we won 2.5 games this week.
Right.
I don't remember.
Freeman's home run total has skyrocketed.
Yes.
Now.
he's the offensive player to watch. He hit 3 this week?
3 this week. I think he's at 6 total.
Yeah, he's at 6.
Batting .277.
Drew Stubbs still tied for second on the team in homers, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's at one extra now, right?
Yeah, Drew Stubbs, since we've released him, been picked up by the Rangers and has already launched a huge home run in Texas. Is either tied a game or won a game. Malik Smith coming around a little bit offensively. He stole more bases than he was caught this week. That's good.
Why aren't we playing him in left field? Why do we have him in left and Malik's in center? What do you think?
Inciarte?
Yeah. You're talking about Malik's, but
yeah.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, it is backwards from how I would do it.
And we don't exclusively have Inciarte. We've had Inciarte in center, too.
You don't play Malik's in left?
Malik Smith only plays center field for the team. Inciarte plays center when Malik's does not. And he plays it well. He plays it as well or better than Malik's.
Right.
He also has been playing left field. And we talked about this last week on the podcast.
Yeah.
I think the reasoning would be Inciarte has played left before.
Right.
And maybe it's part of Malik's transition to the majors to make it as easy for him as possible to just play center field.
What he's been doing his whole life.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, he's still... I think Malik's would be so good if he could read the ball off the bat, but he takes really poor routes.
Yeah, that great catch he had one of those games this weekend. He took,
Yeah, Inciarte would have just been standing under the ball,
yeah,
waiting for it.
We'll see the stat cast on that Malik Smith play. Like, he took a 48% efficient route to the ball.
Right. Yeah, but he did
figure eights all the way there.
But he runs 30 miles an hour,
right.
So right. It's he got there. He's a good defender. I think they're both good center fielders. I would have the stronger arm in center, which is Inciarte.
And that's
but
that helps some. I mean, not even to help every game,
but
right.
It's nothing to really get too worked up about because we just have two good rangy. We have two center fielders playing.
Yeah,
and that's a good problem to have.
Right.
What you don't do is put Markakis or take Markakis out of right. Just leave Markakis in right because
we DH'd him all weekend against Kansas City.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was just a.
I'm sure it's restful.
Yeah,
it's nice. Yeah, the other thing I was wondering about this week was, and I think you have the number on this, is Aaron Blair had a oddly short start. He pitched 3 2/3 and gave up 3 runs. And was pulled.
Yeah, 77 pitches.
77 pitches. And I guess the fourth inning was just...
Fourth inning killed him. And he had 46 strikes, too. So he was having a rough day.
Okay.
There's no doubt.
Okay.
I mean...
He's had some good starts, though, so that's not...
I'm fine with him. Interestingly, the one pitcher who's not really impressing much still is Julio. I think you need him to do a little bit better than this before you dump him there. Trade him for something.
I think he's doing okay.
He's okay. He's just not impressing like the other ones are, I feel like.
I think maybe it's because we expect more from him. I don't know. He's given up, like, hits per nine, fewer than Folty. It's 7.45. That's pretty workable. Walks are at 3, which is not bad.
It's always going to be there for him, though. Not always, but...
Yeah. Strikeouts are not bad. He's, just the win-losses are bad.
They're going to be bad.
For everybody.
For any pitcher on this team.
Yeah, there's, that's fun. There are three pitchers who have pitched for the Braves this year, which have an above 500 winning percentage.
Ugh.
Can you name them without looking?
Gant, maybe? I feel like 1-0.
John Gant, 0-0.
Okay. Damn. What about Bud Norris?
Bud Norris is 1-5. He leads the National League in losses.
So literally the worst guess.
Yes.
Folty 1-0?
Folty is
1-1, 1-2.
1-1.
Damn it. Who is it? I give.
Okay, it's Aroldis Vizcaíno is 1-0.
Nice.
Ryan Weber 1-0, and Weebs Perez 1-0.
Oh, that's right.
Although he pitched 3 previous games and was not very good in them, but
Ryan Weber, he'll be a good candidate for later on
for that game at the end of the season. Jose Ramirez is going to kill him.
Keep it up. Keep it an Evernote. Yeah. Or just
Matt Marksberry as well.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. So that was the weekend review. Wasn't. 2-4. Good week.
I'm telling you, man.
It's one of our best weeks.
Me and Brent, before the podcast, sat down and watched all the game, like recaps, just to see him again. And it felt good watching him.
So, oh, yeah.
Two wins
and extra innings.
Beat the World Series champ.
Yeah. Okay.
And an extra inning game.
It's two and a half wins. It was a...
excuse me.
Braves were active this week on the transaction list, less so than they have been on the Major League 25-man roster, but we'll go back. This is another weekly thing we do. So on May 9th, which was the last time we do a lot of Monday transactions, I noticed. But anyway, May 9th, which was last Monday. The Braves designated Matt Tuiasosopo for assignment and activated Gordon Beckham from the 15-day DL. And Beckham's been one of our better hitters this year, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to have him back. Maybe he's this year's Kelly Johnson, the guy we pick up for...
Or maybe he's this year's like Juan Uribe, who we package with Kelly Johnson and get somebody like John Gant.
Yeah. We did that. Same day, the Braves made two trades last Monday. And if you're thinking about Braves trades, these are probably not... Neither of these is the trade from last week that you're thinking of. We'll get to that. On May 9th, the Braves traded cash to the Pittsburgh Pirates for center fielder Mel Rojas Jr., the son of former Expos closer Mel Rojas.
Senior.
Yeah. Senior.
Got it.
Yeah. He, Mel Rojas is 25 years old. He's a, like, fairly, like, large center fielder. I think he was, I guess he was like 6'2", 225 maybe. Hey, 25 years old. He's been in the Pittsburgh system a few years. He's not completely useless. Like, he's not, like, just some throwaway player. I would say he has more value to us than, like, Matt Tuiasosopo.
Yeah, he's somewhere in between, like, a prospect and minor league depth, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, depends on what how you define prospect. He is a prospect in terms of he could be useful to the major league or to the major league team at some point. And that usefulness, though, is as the worst player on the 25-man roster, I think.
Right.
But that's okay. I mean, somebody has to be the worst, and it's I'd rather it be him than some players.
Yes.
So he's a guy who could has a little bit of power. He's got good on-base skills. I just don't think the batting average and he strikes out a ton. I don't think that's ever going to be in control enough for him to be like a regular player.
Right.
But
he doesn't have enough good things to balance it out.
He's a switch hitter who could handle himself in left field.
You had mentioned earlier that we might be moving, we might be raising the value on switch hitters as an organization, right? Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just something I noticed that we...
have been signing a few more and more.
Yeah, I think we tend to like them. And the acquisition of Rojas also is sort of notable in that regard. He's not... It's not a player that's going to make a big difference, but it's a guy... who for, I mean, depending on what cash we gave to Pittsburgh, I'm fine having him in the system. I think it's better to have him
right.
than not. He's a guy who has the potential to be a bench player on the major league roster. And even as soon as like this year, I mean, he's not that far away. He's having a pretty bad year in AAA, but...
Fairly.
Yeah. So
like 40 at-bats, I think, for him only. So, I mean, it's not... Nothing crazy.
The same day, the Braves also traded cash to the Cleveland Indians for catcher Anthony Recker.
He's kind of a similar dude as far as the bat goes.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, Recker has pretty decent on-base skills, but the batting average is just going to be worse, I think, for Recker. He's a catcher. He is... We're talking about this, too. It seems like every year there's just every team has to trade cash to some other team for some AAA catcher. And it's, I feel like we've been doing that. It seems like it happens all the time. And it always happens with guys like this. Record played for the Mets last year in the majors. So he was on, he contributed, and I'm using air quotes, which is great for a podcast, but he contributed to a World Series to a National League pennant winning team. Contributed with his 239 on base and 212 slugging. Yeah, I don't know. Here's the weird thing with Recker. I was reading about him, and it's the weird thing is that his offense in the majors for his entire career has been awful. So naturally, you think, well, this guy must be a pretty decent fielder behind the plate. No, he's not that either. He's pretty much AJ Pierzynski all around right now.
Right.
The difference is that he's 31, so he may be the AJ Pierzynski who is. If A.J. Pierzynski gets hurt, or if any team wants to trade us for A.J. Pierzynski, maybe Recker can come up and be A.J. Pierzynski.
Yeah, we were talking about... you were just mentioning about the trade. I found the dollar guy.
Oh, yes.
From 5 years ago.
Oh yeah, so yeah, we were talking about this, the record trade before the game, and or before the podcast, and I said, you know, sometimes the cash traded is not substantial at all. Like, me and TJ could afford one of these players to come play for our team in some of these trades. And a few years ago, the Braves made a trade with the Brewers where we traded a dollar for, hang on, was it Will Nieves? Is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't like late in the season, or
Brian McCann had that oblique injury.
Okay.
And the Brewers called us. Like, do you want him? And they were like, yeah, we'll take him. And they're like, all right, yeah, you can have him. Just pay the rest of his contract, pretty much.
Yeah. And so, in order to make it an actual trade, we had to send
them. We gave them a dollar, gave him $250,000.
Right.
And then
right.
Had a catcher.
Right.
It was pretty much just, it was like a free agent signing.
Right.
But.
Yeah. And they just didn't want to go through the trouble of releasing him, because right. Then it would have cost them
more.
$200,000 or whatever. Yeah. Right. So it was, Oh, I love that they called us, too.
Yeah.
They called us. They're like, hey, y'all need a catcher? We don't.
The Brewers were also part of the 1989 Reno Silver Sox trade of Tom Fortugno to the Brewers for a bag of 144 baseballs and
$2,000. $2,000.
Yeah.
I like that they worked that up to include the bag of baseballs, though. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Man.
I got a list of fun trades here. These are fun. There's the Dave Winfield to Cleveland 2 weeks into the strike for a player to be named later. Since the season canceled, the Tribe front office staff took Twins executives out to dinner and picked up the bill as compensation.
You got traded for a steak dinner.
John McDonald traded from the Blue Jays to the Tigers for future considerations. Detroit ended up shipping McDonald back to Toronto after the 2005 season as those future considerations.
So he was traded for himself?
Yeah.
Major League, you know, if it was anybody but John McDonald, I feel like Major League Baseball would have tried to clamp down on that a little bit, because you'd see a lot of that nonsense at trade deadlines if teams could get away with it.
That's why it was investigated in 87 by the commissioner when Dickie Knowles was sent from Chicago to the Tigers during a pennant race.
Yeah.
They sent him for a player to be named later, and in the beginning of the next season, Knowles was sent back to Chicago.
Yeah, that's some some shady stuff. Yeah,
it's not good. That's all I got.
But I wonder who they were in the pennant race with. I wonder who the Cubs were specifically trying to, like. I could see some team doing it against some team they hate. Like if the,
like the Braves doing it to the, whoever, to the Brewers.
Like if the Nationals really pissed us off or something. And it was the Nationals and Phillies, and we just didn't care about the Phillies.
Yeah.
That we'd be like, okay, you know what? Fine, we're trading Freddie Freeman and Julio Teheran for players to be named later to Philadelphia. And then the Phillies go beat the Nationals out for the division, and in the offseason, the players to be named later are Teheran and Freddie Freeman. Yeah, that's funny. It's not surprising teams have tried that before.
It was the Blue Jays. Blue Jays and the Brewers were close to the Tigers that year.
Weird.
It is weird.
Anyway, Anthony Recker's the kind of player who, yeah, he may show up at some point if there's an injury. But he's not going to make a difference, really. All right. May 10th. You still looking at old crazy trades?
No, I'm done.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was just reading about the 1987 baseball season, though.
On May 10th, the Braves placed Jim Johnson on the 15-day DL with a groin strain. Just needs rest from that, I guess. And Ian Kroll was called up from Gwinnett. I talked about Kroll in the preseason. He's a lefty. He's not very good.
He's a third lefty.
Yeah.
On the pen. Which we can bring in to lose games.
Yeah, we need, like, Kroll's the guy we should bring in to just pitch unimportant innings.
Yeah.
May 11th, Braves made a couple of moves in conjunction with each other. First, Braves traded Ulysse Chacin to the Angels for minor league lefty Adam McCreary. Chacin was pretty good for us. I was surprised with how quick we traded him. I thought he would be here till June.
Yeah.
Even though I kept saying every week, trade him, trade him, trade him. I don't know. I was a little disappointed in what we got. I thought, I mean, he can, for a team that wants somebody as a starter, I would have wanted a little more than a lottery ticket. And that's what McCreary is.
Yeah.
But then again,
we may have just been like, this is the highest he's going to be.
I'm sure we called everybody in the league, and yeah. I doubt there was much of a market. I mean, the leverage is not on Atlanta's side with trades like this either.
Right.
Because Angels is going to say, what are you going to, okay, keep him.
Right.
I mean, we'll find a pitcher elsewhere.
Yeah.
But.
Because there are plenty of Chassines
right.
floating around.
And that's the only downside is when you do get a player like this, you sign these players in the offseason with the idea that you're going to trade them, and everybody in baseball knows that you're signing them to trade them.
Right.
So every team knows that your back is up against the wall to have to trade them.
Right.
But, so Chassine has to be, like, amazing to build up enough value to, like, create some demand for him. And he was good. I mean, 9.11 strikeouts per nine. 2.7 walks.
He had a great couple of starts. When he started the season, he was doing fantastic.
But he was, like, blown out in his last start with Braves. Like, really badly. And his ERA was high. I don't know how teams still value that, but his ERA was high. So, maybe there was just more. Maybe there should have been more of a market in my mind for him than there actually was. And again, we opted for a high-risk return with McCreary. McCreary is a 6'8" lefty who throws like 96 miles an hour, and right. he's got apparently no command of his pitches, pretty much. He's not very good, but he was highly touted as a prospect somewhat. Well, he was like, I think, 10th or 12th round pick out of high school, which is not bad. And he went to college, went to Arizona State and like got hurt there, and then switched to some other college and wound up drafted in like the 24th round or
right.
whatever. And so college did not go well for him just because, I don't know, I think it was the issues staying healthy. And so maybe, I don't know, there could be a lefty reliever in there at some point, but he's a lottery ticket. He's a guy.
Right.
It's not the acquisition of him that I like. It's that the Braves are acquiring tons of players like him, because only one out of every like seven is going to
yeah.
do anything. But in order to have those, you've got to have 7, 14,
right.
21.
Right.
So if we acquire enough players like McCreary,
yep.
we're going to wind up with, you know, a few useful major leaguers. And that's the way you have to approach it. It's I don't know. Like I said, a little underwhelmed with the return, but at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't hate it.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse with this. We've talked about it every podcast, but that's been the point all along for people on our Facebook group or anywhere else, any Facebook group, any Braves group. Like, we don't have enough room for all these pitchers that we're getting. What's our plan? Well, they're not all going to be
no
good.
Most of them
are not going to be good enough to pitch for a team that gets to the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
and you get 12 of them like we have. Because, you know, you hope three of them are great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you need.
And that's for, like, the actual prospects. For actual pitching prospects, like Sean Newcomb, those types, I always do 1-1-1, and that is take three good pitching prospects. One will never make it, one will be great, and one will be disappointing, but a major leaguer.
Yeah. And then when you get turned around so quick, like the Cubs are doing now.
You get lucky with a few.
Is when you have five prospects all get brought up, and they're all amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you turn into a 100-win team.
Yeah.
Because you get to go buy three free agents, and you've got five all-stars that are you just got lucky that Addison Russell and Schwarber and all mm-hmm. these people are amazing.
McCreary is going to get tons of chances, too, just because, I mean, you're a 6'8" lefty who throws 96. So you get to pitch until you're 30 professionally just off that.
Yeah.
Unless your arm falls off or whatever. The other move we made was we took Tuia Sisoko off the 40-man roster. And I don't really think that was in conjunction with it. But we also called up Williams Perez from AAA to start in place of Chassine that night. And he was brilliant against the Phillies
yep.
in Atlanta that night. So
Oh, we dropped, what's his name? We released The Triple A catcher.
Oh, yeah, Ryan LaVarnway.
LaVarnway, yeah.
It's not sure. Oh, it's because he was... was he on the 40-man?
I would think so.
Huh. I wonder... Okay, so that's... So we brought in...
Brought in that catcher.
Yeah, we brought in Wrecker.
But LaVarnway's better than him. Maybe not, actually.
I don't know. It's an odd... I don't know what the thinking was, really, with picking up Wrecker and dropping LaVarnway, but then again, they're AAA catchers, so I'm not really going to think too much about it. There's just a merry-go-round of AAA catchers every year, and they're those guys, the Ryan LaVarnway types, are always on it. So
Right.
You could just name them all Ryan LaVarnway, and that's probably okay. Like, just...
Like being John Malkovich?
Yeah.
LaVarnway.
Braves dropped Ryan LaVarnway, traded to the Indians for Ryan LaVarnway. That guy will only be with the team for about 3 months before we call up the Orioles and ask for Ryan LaVarnway.
So every team has LaVarnway jerseys hanging up in their locker room?
Yep. Like, nope, the Orioles traded LaVarnway to the Cubs for LaVarnway. Yeah, it's nothing to... I don't know, but I don't really care all that much about that, you know, that decision. That's actually not true. I'd probably spend more time reading about that decision than the Chassin trade, probably.
Right.
If the Braves sat down and explained why they chose Wrecker over LaVarnway, if they chose Cleveland LaVarnway over Gwinnett LaVarnway, I'd be interested in that. Let's see.
The answer is probably something just like, it saved us $4. It's like, cool.
Oh, yeah. It really might be that. Right. It really... Yeah, we got a steak dinner from the Indians out of it. On a day we were hungry.
Yeah, we were stuck in Cleveland.
Okay.
Let them buy us Wendy's one night.
Let's see. On outfieldflyrule.com this week, we had one of our authors, Dan. Dan, by his own self-admission, is not really into a lot of the statistics. He doesn't really follow a lot of the advanced statistics. And so he thought it'd be fun to kind of go stat by stat and do this slowly over time, and look at different statistics and what's good about him, what's not good about him. And he started with batting average this week. He wrote an article. It's pretty good. Go check it out. It's especially if you're, you know, a listener who is sort of like him, and you know, when we talk about Babbitt and WAR and all this stuff, and it's just sort of we try to explain on the podcast as we go. You know, right. When we're talking about stuff, but
even less than that, like why? I don't know as much about Brent and Chris, but like I love, especially if I'm playing any kind of video game or outside the park or whatever, I almost religiously look at OTP. I mean, to a certain extent, I mean to OBP.
Oh,
to a certain extent. Yeah, it's very. It breaks it down.
Batting average,
definitely give it a quick read.
Batting average is a good place to start too, because it's just. I mean, even like. It's called a batting crown. Like they even say you led the league in hitting if you lead the league in batting average.
Right.
Which does not at all mean you're the best hitter in the league to lead the league in hitting. But I thought it would be... I thought we could do, since he wrote about batting average this week, I thought we could do some batting average stuff on the... Let's start at 2016 Braves. I'm going to make you guess things here.
Okay.
All right, who leads the team batting average right now?
Marquegas.
Incorrect. Take another stab.
Will. Oh, Freeman's up there. Freeman.
277 leads the team right now in bat. We're talking among
qualified
primary players at the positions. Second is Adonis Garcia.
Not on the team.
260.
Yeah.
So a good example of what Dan talks about in the article would be Adonis Garcia and Nick Markakis right now. Adonis Garcia has a 2-point average, advantage over Markakis in batting average.
260 for Garcia, 258 for Markakis.
Yes. Adonis Garcia's on-base percentage is 319, Markakis's is 363, which is substantially better. And Markakis has a better slugging. Markakis isn't the best example to use when it comes to slugging, but he is out-slugging Garcia by a good bit.
Right.
So, like 40 30 points. And
that tells you if this was elevated to 360 and 358 at the end of a season, and Garcia's getting a batting title, Markakis, I can tell from OBP and slugging, is clearly the better person. Is the person you would rather have in the batter's box.
Oh, yeah.
Any moment.
Yes. So that's a good example of how misleading. I mean, and the Braves realize this because they sent one guy down to AAA.
And the other guy batted the leadoff.
Right. So, you know, the notion of a batting champ, you know, led the league in hitting, you know, not really. Adonis Garcia leads. I'm using the air quotes again. I'm the worst. Yeah. Adonis Garcia leads Nick Markakis in hitting, but he doesn't really. All right, so let's do, since 2016 is so depressing, I'm going to get off 2016 Braves. Let's go to the Braves all-time leaderboards.
Modern, are you going to make me guess Billy Hamilton? He's in there somewhere.
All right, let's see. Times.
Old Billy Hamilton, not fast new Billy Hamilton.
Okay, let's do it this way. Well, since the days of Billy Hamilton in 1898, the Braves have had 1, 2, 3, 4 players bat over 354 in a season. Can you name those 4 players?
Cardi.
Rico Cardi batted 366 in 1970.
Chipper,
2008, he batted 364, won the batting title.
No, it's harder. It's not, I don't think it's Gar. I don't think he got that high.
He did not. You're correct. Chipper's on base in 2008 was 470. That was that year he would just, like, every pitch he could just rope to opposite center field.
He let him throw 3 balls. That was the year where they were interviewing him after a game, and he was like, sometimes if there's a strike but it's not your pitch, you just have to foul it off. And I was like, what the hell? He did that on purpose?
Yeah.
Like, bunting the ball foul just to get another pitch.
Yeah.
He was great to watch that year. That's the Chipper Jones I think I'll remember. Is that, like,
mm-hmm.
2 feet over the shortstop's glove. Just every time.
It's amazing. He was doing that at, like, 35, 36 years old. And he had, I know we talked about this recently, you did not remember his 2004 season as being as bad as it was. But he batted 248.
Yeah.
In 2004, at age 32, he was still somewhat in his prime.
With good protection, too. Like,
he had a huge on base. He always had a big on base. Yeah. But it was, like, one of the lowest of his career. It was 362. He hit 30 home runs that year, but, like, all he did was hit homers. That was when 2004 was the year we moved him. He was still in left, but we moved him back.
Right.
To third, midseason. But anyway, to do that, and then 4 years later win a batting title is... I mean, I'm sure a lot of it is random luck with, like, BABIP and whatnot, but it's...
still impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I like looking at these players' careers.
All right, there are 2 more?
There are 2 more.
Let's go ahead and do this first. Hank Aaron?
Hank Aaron is correct. Hank Aaron, you know, there's a perception among some people, and... Wait, Hank, Baseball Reference is asking me what I'm... Like, do you mean this Hank Aaron? Yes, I mean this Hank Aaron. There's no other Hank Aaron. Why do they take me to which Hank Aaron page do you want to view? Anyway. Yeah, there's a perception, and for a long time, a lot of people always, and I don't know, I blame, like, sports radio for this. There was a perception that Hank Aaron was just a home run hitter.
Yeah.
And he was a great hitter. Yeah, he batted 305 for his career, which is pretty much what Chipper did.
Yep.
Hank Aaron, at age 25, 1959, led the league in hits. He batted 355. He also led the league in slugging percentage at .636. Only finished third in the MVP race that year. 39 homers. That's a hell of a year. That was one of only 3 seasons where he had over 400 on base. The others were 1971, at age 37. He batted 327 with a .410 on base. 669 slugging at age 37, 47 homers. Anyway, Hank Aaron, yeah. Hank Aaron's I think every now and then, Braves fans should just go pull up Hank Aaron's Baseball Reference page and look at everything, because it's easy to forget how good he was at all facets of the game.
Yeah.
In 1963, he hit 44 homers and stole 31 bases. He was 30-30 player 1 year. He won 2 batting titles in his career. never led the league in on base percentage, oddly enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look at the other people that have hit that many home runs. They're good baseball players, all of them. None of them are. You don't hit 650 home runs just by being a power hitter who doesn't hit.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You're talking about Mickey Mantle and Babe Ruth and Barry Bonds and Sosa. Even I mean, these are good ball players, good hitters.
And he is still Major League's all-time leader in total bases.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, you got one more.
I gotta guess this one is Eddie Matthews.
Not Eddie Matthews.
All right. Is this Rogers Hornsby?
Yes, Rogers Hornsby. I was going to say, it's a guy who I always forget played for the Braves.
I should have guessed this first.
I think it was only one season, maybe two.
Late 20s, is that right?
Yeah, 1928. It was his only year
I've learned in
Boston.
In the past year.
Yeah, he led the league in walks that year, too. He led the league in batting average.
His MVP, like 500?
498. Yep. He led the league. This is what the Triple Crown should be: batting average, on base, and slugging percentages.
Right.
And if that were the Triple Crown, Hornsby would have won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of those
in a row.
And he took a 2-year break where he only batted like 360 in between.
Loser.
Yeah,
goes without saying he led an OPS all those years.
I wonder how he wound up in Boston for a single year. Okay, so in January 1928, the New York Giants traded him to the Braves for Shanty Hogan and Jimmy Welsh.
Oh, Shanty Hogan!
I know, Shanty Hogan wound up finishing 8th in the MVP race that year as a member of the Giants.
Is this like
starting catcher for the Giants?
Mock the Tigers for trading Dole Alexander for John Smoltz, and it's like, Dole Alexander did what he was supposed to do with the Tigers that year.
Yeah, it was really good. Jimmy Welsh, he could hit a little. So the Braves traded two good players for like the best player in the National League at the time. But then at the end of the year, the Braves traded him to the Cubs for Bruce Cunningham, Percy Jones, Lou Leggett, Freddie McGuire, Sox Seabold, and $200,000. So
that's a lot of money, though.
That was a lot of money at the time. So Bruce Cunningham was a bad pitcher for 4 years with the Braves. Percy Jones was a bad pitcher for a couple years, or for 1 year with the Braves. Lou Leggett, nicknamed Doc, bad hitter. Freddie McGuire was a minorly useful middle infielder. And Sox Seabold
was a cat. got a cat.
Sox Seabold threw a lot of innings for the Braves over the next few years, but was just not very good at it.
We also got $3 million. That's the
exchange rate.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, Roger, that's just an odd single season in Roger Hornsby's career, because he was great. I mean, he had 498 on base. He walked 107 times, presumably because there's no one else in the Boston lineup to fear in any way, shape, or form. But those are the Braves that have hit over 354 in a season. Hornsby holds the post 1900 team record.
Okay, is it Billy Hamilton?
No, Hugh Duffy batted
a major league
record 440 in 1894.
That's right,
Hugh Duffy. Billy Hamilton had a 369, had a 366 in the 1890s, but Hugh Duffy in 1894, nicknamed Sir Hugh. Apparently.
How do you lead the NL in batting average, OBP, slugging, and finish 13th in the MVP voting?
I'm going to guess that Boston was bad in 28. Yeah, 50 and 103.
Pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Bottomley on the NL MVP that year.
Yeah, Jim Bottomley had a 4-homer game, I believe, at one point.
Oh, nice.
Maybe drove in 12 in a single game. Hugh Duffy in 1894, 51 doubles, 18 homers. 18 homers in the 1890s? That was a good year.
He ran a lot.
16 triples, 48 steals. He batted .440 with a .502 on base and a .694 slugging percentage. He's a good ball player. Old Sir Hugh. He's a power hitter. 5'7", 168 pounds.
Like Shanty Hogan finishing 5 spaces above Roger Hornsby. Just because his team was better. Artist Horns we had was better in every statistical category.
Yeah, the baseball writers weren't.
Yeah.
I don't know. They weren't very statistically inclined back in the day. They're just...
Yeah. Like, Shanty, that's a good Christian name. Eighth place.
Also, I'm sure there was a bit of Hornsby fatigue at that point, which was he had won the award in 25.
Right.
And he had been great all decade, so they were just probably sort of... We've seen him dominate for great teams, so...
Right.
All right, career Braves batting average. Some of the same guys. That, your all-time Braves leader in batting average, is Billy Hamilton.
Is it?
Yes. 339 career average, sliding Billy Hamilton. It's very confusing.
Who's the old ones? Stahl? What's his... Is that somebody?
Chick Stahl?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chick Stahl, third, with a 327 average. Hugh Duffy is second. Chick Stahl played in the 1890s. He's turn-of-the-century player as well.
And I bet Cardi and Gar are on that list. And Aaron.
Cardi and Gar tied 317. They're sixth all-time. Aaron is 10th at 310. Higher than Chipper.
Yeah, Chipper's, what, like, through a three, through a four?
Yeah.
Huh.
The others are pretty tough. One is a Hall of Famer, fourth all-time. Another guy that I didn't realize really played for the Braves, this is the last 3 years of his career, were in Boston.
And he batted 320.
He batted, yeah. He's a career 340 hitter, which is way up there. First baseman, used to hold a record, a single season record that has been broken in the last 15 years. A major single season record.
Sisler?
George Sisler.
Nice.
Yeah, George Sisler, whose old record of 257 hits in a season was broken by Ichiro.
I forgot. I barely knew he was a Brave.
Yeah, his last 3 years. This all he did was rap singles and doubles, mostly.
Huh.
He lost his power and his triple speed by that point. Okay, next, fifth all-time in batting average. Love this guy. Jimmy Bannon. Jimmy Bannon played...
Thanks for not making me guess that.
Played for 3 years in the 1890s. He batted 336, 347, and 253. And then we cut him at age 25 because he wasn't batting 340 anymore. That's the 1890s.
Get out of here.
Either that or... No, but he... His nickname was Foxy Grandpa. Not making that up.
Why not?
I really want to spend more time to read about him at some point. Foxy Grandpa Jimmy Bannon. They're pretty light on information on Jimmy Foxy Grandpa Bannon. Then you had Cardi and Gar. Next would be Billy Southworth, who batted 315 in his Braves career. Billy Southworth played for the Braves for 3 years in the early 1920s. Just an outfielder who hit. That's about it.
He hit.
It didn't hit extremely well. He's a Hall of Famer, Billy Southworth. That's one of the guys I would miss on the Sporkle list of Hall of Famers, is Billy Southworth. And then 311 career average for Lance Richburg.
Nope.
Another oldie, but apparently a somewhat goodie. Late 20s. He would have played on that. He finished 15th in the same MVP race that Hornsby finished 13th.
Okay.
In the 28th season. So we had like good players on that 28 team.
Yeah.
And still only won 50 games.
Right.
So,
we traded away all of our pitching.
Yeah. So, Braves fans of 2016, you think this team's frustrating?
Yeah.
Imagine having, like, two of the best players in baseball and still never winning any games.
Yeah.
That
imagine
would be...
having, like, Miguel Cabrera and Giancarlo Stanton on your team, but your pitchers are me and Brent.
Right. You have the same record as you do
right
now. Anyway, yeah, batting average. I mean, also batting average. The reason batting average became such... I think it's easy to wonder, like, why wasn't it always on base percentage? Because it's the simplest thing. If you're gonna treat times on base the same, why not just treat all times on base?
Because walks.
It's because walks were, first of all, there's a stigma around walks back in like the 1890s or whenever, and the stigma was that walks were unmanly.
Right.
Pitchers were also not supposed to deceive batters with their, you know.
Right.
Pitchers were supposed to present the ball for hitting.
Yeah.
And sure, they were supposed to do it. They tried to do it in a way where the batter would hit it to a fielder, but and maybe strike him out every now and then. But at this, but it was, I mean, there was a huge revolt against the curveball when it came out. Like, as like they almost banned the curveball from baseball. Also, batting average came around at a time when I think it took 7 balls to walk a player.
Yeah.
So walks really weren't a thing. They didn't keep track of walks.
They didn't keep track of them. Yeah, that's the...
They were pitcher error is all they were.
Right.
The hitter did nothing to earn the walk in the minds of baseball people back in the day. So there was no reason to keep track of it, and at least for hitters. And later on, we found out that, oh, hitters totally have control over walks. There clearly are guys. Chipper Jones can draw walks.
Yep.
And A.J. Pierzynski cannot draw walks. Like, those are those are things we know now. So that's why batting average became the dominant stat. And so traditionally, that's why batting average is all we cared about. But that doesn't mean we still need to.
Right.
Because if you have on-base percentage, then you have batting average. It is in there. It doesn't mean you're ignoring batting average if you're looking at on-base percentage.
Right.
You're looking at it. On-base percentage is basically just better batting average is all it is.
Right.
Yeah, it's not one or the other. It's just that batting average is part of on-base.
Right. So, and batting average still tells you something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't like... We're not telling you to throw batting average out the door. It's still a stat that... You just have to know what it is. Know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
That's... especially if Dan keeps writing about this on OFR. All the stats are fine. They just tell you different things. You have to make sure you know what they tell you.
Right.
Before...
Also, on-base percentage tells you a much simpler thing. It just tells you, hey, how often does this guy get on base?
How good are they at not getting out?
Yeah. Whereas batting average is how good are they at getting on base when they hit the ball and
the fielder doesn't mess up.
The fielder doesn't mess up. You don't count walks, and you don't count when they hit the ball and somebody, and then they get out and somebody moves up a base. That don't count. And then if somebody makes an error, that does count, though, against them.
Right.
And so it's this and this and this. There's like there's a lot of rules to batting average that don't really make sense. I mean, if you're making the game up on the spot, you're making the stat up on the spot, and you're explaining it to someone who doesn't understand the game that well, you're going to come up with on-base percentage.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like, oh, that makes sense. And if you come up with batting average and try to explain all those rules to people, they're just going to tune you out. As they should, because it was created for 1890s baseball, and we don't watch 1890s baseball anymore.
No.
Okay, well, that's our batting average talk. I'm hoping Dan does a few more of these because they're fun to take and run with like that. The week ahead for the Braves, we got 4 games in what is considered by many the prettiest stadium in baseball. PNC, Pittsburgh.
It is pretty.
Start tonight. Williams-Perez against John Neese tonight. I guess we'll see if Williams-Perez managed to keep the lightning in the bottle.
You know who pitched yesterday for the Pirates? Garrett Cole, which is great news for the Braves.
Oh, that is fantastic news for the Braves. Oh, yeah.
We got a 4-game series and we don't have to see him.
Yeah. You got Aaron Blair going Tuesday against Juan Nicasio. Julio Teheran against Francisco Liriano on Wednesday. Mike Fultonavich against Jeff Locke, former Braves prospect Jeff Locke, on Thursday. And then the Braves turn around and head to the other side of Pennsylvania Friday for a 3-game set with the Phillies. Matt Whistler against Aaron Nola. That's a pretty decent game to check out. They're both, young pitchers with a bright future, according to most. Williams-Perez against Adam Morgan guy who did pretty well against us last week. And, finishing off Sunday, Aaron Blair against Jared Eichhoff. We got 7 games this week. I always do my pick on how many games the Braves will win. Can we do 3 and 4? Can we maybe?
I think we can sneak one from Pittsburgh.
I don't know though. They're all on the road. Then again, it's not like we have home field advantage.
Yeah, we'll do better on the road. Better, more air quotes. Better. I'm gonna say 3.
2. Yeah, we gotta win at least 2. It's bad if we don't win 2 of these games. But also the Phillies have to fall off at some point, too. We just know they will. The Phillies are not a good team. I don't think.
Who are our pitchers in the Philly series?
Whistler, again? Perez, and Blair. So
I'm gonna stay with 3. 3 and 4.
3 and 4 for the week?
1 against the Pirates, 2 against the Phillies, I'll call it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we can still win. It's a 4-game sweep is it's tough for a good team to do against a bad team, which is what this is. Like, this is the kind of example, this series is the kind of example we use when talking about baseball probabilities, which is that a four-game sweep is never, it's never probable. It's definitely not probable in the playoffs when you have good teams. It's, and that's the time you always hear about these examples, like how unlikely a sweep is in the playoffs, is because a sweep is unlikely even if you got like a team like the Pirates playing the Braves.
It's happening.
Yeah, so a sweep's not likely.
And we don't even have to play in Turner Field.
Hey, we're playing 250 ball this year. That means we're going to take one from the Pirates. And then, yeah, I'd love to take two from the Phillies.
I think 250 ball is going to be a recurring theme this year for the Braves.
God, I really hope. That's really bad. Like, that's historically bad. That is, that is more bad than we need to be.
It's like 40 wins.
Yeah. Yeah, that's up there with the 62 Mets.
Maybe 300 ball. Let's keep it at 300 ball.
Yeah. We can get 300 ball off, feel pretty good. Going 30-70 over our first 100 games.
Like the end of that Mr. 3000 movie. The most unrealistic baseball movie ever. We're going to get to third place. It's like, yeah, these guys don't care about third place.
I asked Chris this last week. What would you take right now over under 99.5 losses?
I mean, I'm just always going to go under.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's just history agrees with me. It's just hard to lose 100 games.
Yeah, I don't know. This team's special, though.
This special. What'd you say?
I've almost for like 2 weeks now, I've taken over.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I think it's close, though. That's why I'm still setting it at 99.5, because I think it's
yeah,
close.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under. They're going to...
If we're still at 250 and 3 weeks from now, I'm gonna move that to like 105.5 or so. If we keep playing like this, then it's gonna be close to like 110 for the over under that we're still playing in July. But
I don't know. That's rough.
Yeah. Anything else?
Well, not now.
I like that we're messing up some leaderboards. I saw somewhere where we were ranked 32nd in baseball in losses. Like, out of 30 teams.
Right.
It's like we're messing up their algorithms on websites.
Yeah, we are that bad. But pitching's looking good. Pitching's young. That's what we always wanted to see.
Yeah.
So, we'll see what happens with that. But it was a good week for that. Everybody looked good. Mm-hmm. Blair had a rough outing. But Julio was fine. I think he gave up 3 earned, and the rest of those runs were from the pen. And that's the big problem right now. Me and Brent were talking before the podcast. The bullpen's just miserable.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got like pretty much one guy back there who we like.
Yeah, Cervenka's been okay too, but it's too early to really tell if we really like him all that much. Ogando and Kroll are just guys who get us through innings that don't matter. O'Flaherty the same, yeah. Really. Grilly, and maybe Bud Norris can be like the surprise big guy in the pen this year.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
That would be good. Whistler and Fulte look good. And we'll see if Perez can keep it up.
All right, that's it. Thanks for listening. You can catch us online at outfieldflyrule.com. You can like Outfield Fly Rule's Facebook page. You can join the Outfield Fly Rule Facebook group, which is different. Find us on Twitter, do all the social things on the internet. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcasting app of your choice. I use, what's the one I use? Overcast?
That's Overcast is what you use.
I really like Overcast, yeah. I recommend it for podcast listeners.
I'm a tool. And, I'll use the Apple one.
Yeah.
I'm boring.
Thanks for listening, and until next time, go Braves. We'll be right back.